This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking. Well, it's the Trump tariff day, 9th of April 2025. We'll be focusing a lot on it and the implications for the world, but it does look like the world as we knew it has changed. With those tariffs coming into force today, the implications for South African exporters are suddenly right here with us. A little bit of good news for the citrus exporters is that as long as those products were on the water by 6 a.m. this morning, they are going to be allowed into the U.S. tariff-free, but it's the only time. Next time, they're going to be subjected to the tariffs, which will make it impossible for them to compete. I learned that from a fascinating interview that I had this morning with Matthew Poole. He is the partner at Weber Wenzel for International Trade. And here's a little highlight of that conversation. If you are exporting into the United States or indeed anywhere, or if you are producing products in South Africa which might be exposed to exports from other parts of the world, because remember, they're cutting off the American market, which means that goods which were previously sent there will very soon be sent to South Africa amongst other countries instead, and it will bring a whole new lot of competition for manufacturers here in South Africa. If any of those affect you, please go and watch the interview. It really is fascinating. But let's pick up now with Matthew Poole.
There are a couple of things industries more generally can be looking into on this. In terms of your opportunities where you wish to continue exporting to the United States, things to be looking at there is if there is an opportunity to perhaps export the product slightly earlier in the production process. Would lower the cost of the product leaving the country, would therefore lower the amount of duty that would be paid when it enters the US. With certain products, you've got services combined with products at the moment in the pricing that could potentially be split out so that you've got the product-specific pricing which attracts the duty, and the services which at the moment are exempt would fall outside of the scope of the duty. So if, and another opportunity, depending on the industry, if you've got operations in more than one country, you need to be considering is because these were not uniformly applied tariffs, there might be an opportunity to shift your exports from a higher tariff country to a lower tariff country. For example, in our case, if you could shift to Namibia, you know, it's I believe 21% rather than 30%.
Is if you work for an American company that is exporting, is making stuff here and exporting back into the US, or any other company for that matter, is it possible or likely that they would be closing up shop?
So I think it's a difficult one to predict, and I take back to what you said earlier that we do have to take President Trump quite seriously. But we also do need to recognize that he has, in recent times, imposed and rolled back tariffs. So I think what remains to be seen here is just how long these tariffs will be in force and whether there are opportunities to make concessions possibly and get those tariffs lowered. So it's a little bit difficult to predict what in the long term would be happening here.
It sounds like it's a bit of a game for some people anyway. But if you're working for these companies, it's not a game at all. You might be losing your job.
Yeah, I think and I think for the people who work for the companies and for people generally, this is a very, very serious consideration. I think for Americans, for people in other countries, this has quite serious implications.
If you were to put your neck on a line on the line and to say, if we look back on this in a year's time, there are some who say that it is a negotiating position by Donald Trump, that he'll negotiate individually with countries, but he's not too keen to be negotiating with South Africa, certainly not the way things are standing at the moment. But How would you see this all working out? Maybe give us an upside and a downside.
Sure. I think if you, as you say, neck on the line, I think a year from now, it's going to be, it's still probably going to be a negative implication, particularly for us here in South Africa. I'm sure for many countries in a year's time, the negotiations will have negated those duties. I don't think it will be all countries, and I'm not sure it will include us.
So your recommendation then to your clients would be, look, there's a hard position in Pretoria. Just prepare for the worst and try and do what you can. Maybe set up an operation in Namibia to help a little. Or Zim. Zim are doing their best to try and get zero tariffs from their side. So I suppose there will be the outliers here. But if you're running a business, you can't just switch on and off the export tap. You better start preparing for the worst if you're South African.
So I think not just if you're South African, I think if you're based anywhere, you do need to start making those preparations. But I think it's also a question of being as flexible as possible in your operations. This is a situation which does change, and he has, in his short time he has been in office for this term, changed position a number of times. So it's a matter of keeping careful focus, keeping up to date on all the steps that are being taken in Washington, and being ready to react as quickly as possible.
Yeah, quite a story, isn't it? Well, that is on the one part, that the Trump tariffs are here. As far as South Africa is concerned, we aren't in a very good situation. There are countries around the world that have been negotiating already with the United States, some like China, and we'll talk about that in a little while. And South Africa seemed to be in the crosshairs of the Trump administration. Well, yesterday when I spoke with Moletsi Mbeki, political analyst, he said that he would be advising people in the Government of National Unity to get over to the United States, talk to the think tanks in Washington, find out what it is that this guy, i.e. Donald Trump, wants, and then see what we can give him so that we don't fall into this very deep pit, which the tariff war or a tariff war would put South Africa into. We are an open economy. 50% of South Africa's goods are either exported or imported. So it's not in our interests here to have or to participate in any way in some kind of a tariff war that now appears to be happening. One of those think tanks that Moletsi discussed, or mentioned rather, was the Hudson Institute. And last night, I spoke with Josh Meservey, who is a fellow at the Hudson Institute in Washington, and posed that question to him, and saying, what is it that South Africa would have to do to get off this 30% tariff list?
There's actually still a great reservoir of goodwill towards South Africa as a country. It is the government that has been the problem, specifically the ANC for the United States. These are fixable problems, but they do have to be fixed. And the ANC is, and the government writ large, are the entities that have to fix them before the United States will consider moving away from a trajectory that is headed in a draconian direction, I would say. The ANC needs to understand the appetite in Washington, D.C. to confront the bad behavior that has been going on. The appetite is significant, and I think this bill is one indication of that. So, specifically, they need to figure out how to either drop the ICJ case against Israel or defang it, walk it back in some way, be less supportive of it, so that it dies a natural death. They need to figure out a carve out for American companies so they are not subjected to BEE restrictions, which for this administration is very problematic because it is a race based law. And notwithstanding South Africa's history and its unique circumstances, that is still highly problematic for the administration, because it also touches on domestic political issues here in the United States. The Trump the Trump movement was animated in part by concern over this creeping racialization in the United States, where race-based criteria were being encoded into law. And certainly a lot of norms were hardening around sorting people based strictly on the color of their skin. And the fear there was an existential one, that by doing that, you are destroying the merit system in the United States that made the country as powerful and as full of opportunity and peaceful as it is. So those are the deep currents behind the Trump administration's dislike of things like BEE. So that was all a long-winded way of saying the government has to figure out a carve out some sort of workaround, maybe special economic zones. I don't know what it would be, but they have to figure out something on the BEE issue. They have to figure out how to defang the ICJ case. And they just need to stop being so publicly hostile in their rhetoric. It's almost a constant barrage of provocations, of thumbing their nose at the United States, of trying to demonstrate how strong and tough they are, and they're going to stand up to the nasty Americans. There just needs to be much more mature rhetoric from the ANC, and more serious rhetoric. It's kind of unserious the way they talk sometimes. I think all of those things would go a very long way to helping this relationship. I think they could also put on the table zero tariffs. This is clearly a massive priority for the Trump administration. So if they want to signal that they're really serious, say zero tariffs on all American goods into South Africa. I know these are hard asks, but the relationship has deteriorated so thoroughly because of the actions the South African government and specifically the ANC have been taking for decades, that this is where we are now. And I fear that this is headed in even a far worse place if these types of hard actions, serious actions, are not taken by the ANC.
In the world of business banking, the bottom line can often triumph over relationships. At Investec, we value both. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking. Out of the ordinary.
At Sun Exchange, we make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. Visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
Well, it is a difficult time that we're going through, but who knows? There's always a reason, even though we can't understand it at the time. And those of us who don't have the insight into what's going on behind the scenes can be pulling our hair out. But, well, we don't know why. But generally speaking, things do work out. But right now, the drama continues, even within the White House itself. The Trump tariffs have been imposed, but it's not all happy family in the Trump administration. Elon Musk, the South African-born richest man in the world, has been having a full go at Peter Navarro, who is Trump's advisor on trade and manufacturing. Here's the story from our partners at Bloomberg.
A new White House feud is spilling over into the Twitter sphere. Peter Navarro, President Trump's top trade advisor, who also apparently goes by the pseudonym Ron Vera, dismissed Elon Musk's push for zero tariffs between the U.S. and Europe, calling the Tesla CEO not even a car manufacturer, but a car assembler reliant on parts from other countries. Musk, meanwhile, just posted on X, quote, "Navarro is truly a moron. What he says here is demonstrably false. By any definition whatsoever, Tesla is the most vertically integrated auto manufacturer in the United States of America with the highest percentage of American content. Navarro should ask the fake expert he invented, the aforementioned Ron Vera." Let's bring in Bloomberg Technology co-host Ed Ludlow with details. So aside from you know, the fake economist that Navarro cites in his research. What do we know about this feud?
Well, I think there is certainly a rift between Elon Musk and others around Donald Trump on the issue of tariffs, right? There were reports over the weekend that Musk had made a direct appeal to Trump in the hours that preceded the news of Monday and the markets of Monday to rethink the tariff stance. What's interesting, though, is like Tesla is the most insulated of the US automakers and the foreign OEMs that manufacture in the United States, right? There is data, it is in Tesla's 10Ks and the annual impact report that it publishes about the volume and locality of components that assembled. So take Austin, for example, Austin, Texas. Tesla's VP of finance pointed out that the powertrain or drivetrain components, not just the assembly of the car itself, but the motor and the battery pack are all done there locally on site. And, you know, Musk himself referenced this Kelly Blue Book data that Tesla makes the most American-made cars. But that's data that's there to see. Clearly, there is some pressure, though, coming from somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. I do want to check at Tesla shares up about 6.7%, close to a session high. I don't know if that's related to this feud that we're seeing play out on social media. But Ed, you make a good point. I mean, that there's folks within Trump's inner circle who are feuding right now. Elon Musk obviously is part of that feud. And this comes as potentially we're counting down to when his time as a special advisor to this administration comes right to an end.
Indeed, we are. But there's been no indication that Trump is going to ask Elon Musk to leave. Lots of interesting things happening. And I guess the best we can do is just stay tuned to the news and not get too caught up in the noise. That's a story, by the way, that we're going to be returning to with two of our wise men, Piet Viljoen and Sean Pesch, a little later in today's Biz News Briefing. Before we get there, though, one of the stocks in the Biz News model portfolio is ASML. It is a company that is based in the Netherlands, and it could be really badly hurt if the Trump tariffs continue indefinitely. Today, the Netherlands trade minister spoke to Bloomberg about what exactly the Netherlands and indeed the European Union is going to be doing after China retaliated to the Trump tariffs by putting 34% duty on American goods going into China. And as a consequence of that, Trump just promptly pushed up the duty on all Chinese goods to 104%.
I'd like to just get your takeaway from the meetings that you've had today and sort of what the state of European response is to the possible imposition of these tariffs.
Well, the European Union, all the member states are very unified in their approach. What we want to do is negotiate with the United States. We don't want to escalate it. We don't want to put tariffs back immediately. But in the end, if negotiation and getting the tariffs off the table is not possible, then we will not hesitate to put countermeasures in place.
And how concerned are you? Because another thing that Donald Trump has talked about is targeting different sectors, chips among them. Obviously, the Netherlands is home to one of the only company that can make these sort of lithography machines. How concerned are you about that? Are you prepared for a possible action in that direction?
Well, that would be very bad news, not only for the European Union and the Netherlands, but it will also be very bad news for the U.S. And I hope Mr. Trump is smart enough to know that our economies are very much connected and that we depend on each other and that tariffs are very bad for all of us.
I'd also like to get your sense about the conversation that happened on the subject of China, about the possibility of having a huge flood of overcapacity that is no longer being able to move into the United States coming over to Europe. What is the state of those discussions? Are there going to have to be more trade barriers between Europe and China?
Well, we don't want to put trade barriers into place, but we do see the risk of China bringing in massive amounts of goods into the European Union, and our trade policy will not change. We have some instruments in order to maintain a level playing field. We do have concerns for state funding and also for dumping of goods. And we have some instruments in place, and we will not hesitate to use these instruments.
That was Renate Kleve, who is the Dutch trade minister. And she touches on a very important point there. Once Chinese goods are taken out of the ambit of the US markets and with 104% duties, there's no question that they will be, they'll be looking for other homes to go to. The EU will no doubt react, as she's explained. But what about South Africa? What does that do to BRICS if suddenly South Africa starts levying hectic duties onto Chinese goods, which are going to be in abundance or in abundant supply and looking for new markets anywhere, including ours? There's so many challenges that lie just ahead. And the Johannesburg Stock Exchange has been reflecting this. Another poor day for shares on the JSE, with some big declines for industrial stocks. A very large hit by Sun International and Southern Sun hotel groups, which were down by nearly 10% each in the trade this morning. And also under a lot of pressure is Sasol, which today fell another 4.5% to 55 Rand a share. That on the oil price as a further complication. So what do investors do now? I spoke this morning to two of our wise men, Piet Viljoen and Sean Pesch, who often attend BizNews conferences and are amongst the most popular keynote speakers because of the no-nonsense focused way that they approach the investment markets. You can watch the full interview on BizNews TV with the two of them. It gives some really good insights, indeed, into that Million Rand Challenge, where Piet Viljoen and Magnus Hastek have got portfolios that at the moment are neck and neck. But let's get a highlight from our two wise men on what they think investors should do now.
The backdrop in the world is, I think the world over the next 5 to 10 years is returning to what you call home bias. Assets are going to come back home to different countries because of tariffs, because of trade barriers, because of capital controls, because of all these sort of regulatory interventions that will happen as governments try to force their savers to fund their deficits. With that backdrop, where are the fund flows going to happen? Well, they're going to be flow out of the very overweight positions that investors have, and that is American assets and American bonds, generally speaking. This is a broad generalization, but so they will flow out of the overweight positions. You know, the US is, I think, 70% of the MSCI world. It's completely out of whack with its economic standing in the world. And they will flow into places where they are underweight. Now, South Africa is a place where investors are massively underweight, both local and foreign. And right now, in the eye of the storm, it feels terrible. It feels bad. And it feels like things are just collapsing. But I think our political situation here is better than in many, many other places in the world. If you stand back and look at it objectively, there are actual debates happening at a political level about how much we should spend, how much we should tax, and so on and so forth. Whereas America is wild. It's completely wild. The UK, Sean will say, the politics there is a disaster zone. So we are not unique. We are not different. The one thing we have in our favor is that investors are massively underweight this place. And you're being paid to take on the risk. I mean, our bond yields at 12, 13% with inflation at 3%. I mean, that it must be one of the best investment propositions in the world. If you can just close your eyes, buy the bonds and sit tight.
So I think one needs to think about how much pain you can withstand and how much you want to do this, because the world, it's going to be rocky. There's no mistake about it. I mean, we're only just starting here. Imagine you're the CFO of a US company. You're about to give guidance at the first quarter results in a couple of weeks' time. How on earth do you give guidance? So there's uncertainty. PE multiples will come down. And I agree with Pete. I think interest rates are going up. Not that we macro guys. So the first thing is make sure you're diversified. Okay. And when you're diversified, properly diversified. So you have to be diversified. And then secondly, agree with Pete, look at the valuation. You've seen values down 5.5%, growth down 17%. So that's with the US. So valuation is very important. And take the PE multiple of your stocks and create the earnings yield. So if it's 30 times earnings, it's a 3% yield. Okay. That's if you got all the money. So is that going to protect you? I don't think it's going to protect you. So valuation is very important. So be diversified, be in cheaper assets and have a little bit of cash, because as the Oracle of Omaha says, be greedy when others are fearful and fearful when others are greedy. But you can only be greedy if you've got cash. Okay. So you can't take advantage of these kinds of situations. There will be amazing opportunities, and that's why you've got to stay the course. But you've got to have some liquidity to be able to take advantage of those opportunities.
Sean Pesch, and before him, Piet Viljoen, and I do again urge you to go into BizNews TV and watch that interview. Well, getting back to the oil price and Sasol's tumble, it's down 70% since the beginning of last year. A lot of that is because of the oil price, which has now got down to $60 a barrel. Well, consumers might be celebrating the plunge, and the question, I guess, is how long will it last for, and why did so much of a drop in the oil price happen just in the last little while? Here are partners at Bloomberg.
Oil is about to test $60 to the downside. And it wasn't just tariffs that got oil moving. It was that surprise announcement out of OPEC Plus to bring forwards, bringing extra barrels to the market. You don't think that was an economic decision, do you?
No, I don't find any of the arguments that says it was an economic decision quite convincing. It doesn't make sense when the markets is moving the way you were mentioning it's moving to add a supply shock to it. And these moves were not unanticipated. We all knew something big was going to happen on April 2nd. A big announcement was going to happen. It was already dubbed Liberation Day. And it was odd to add a supply shock to oil markets on top of it. And if you think in terms of profit maximization for OPEC Plus, yes, they may be producing more, and that may bring more revenue if prices stay where they are. But typically, prices move more than volumes. So whatever they gained on volumes, they lost on prices. And for them, it's a lost volume. If you think about the argument that they said, it's about punishing cheaters. Well, it makes sense to do this when prices are stable and high. It doesn't make sense to do that when your shock is drowning in a big demand shock that comes from sweeping tariffs from the US on the whole world. So I don't find any of these arguments convincing that there was an economic motivation behind the move.
So what is the motivation then? Ziad, tell us. What do you think it is?
Well, if you look at the political sort of circumstances, there is a few things that may point that it was politically motivated rather than economically motivated. First, if you look at the two biggest sort of producers within OPEC Plus, Russia and Saudi Arabia, Russia is in the middle of negotiations for a Ukraine ceasefire, and lower oil prices play well in Washington. Mm. Saudi Arabia will receive Trump in his first presidential visit, and it's nice to provide a few lower oil prices ahead of the visit. Actually, hours before the OPEC Plus decision, Saudi Arabia and other Gulf states said that their bases and their airspace would not be used in an attack against Iran. And maybe that move was, to sweeten that announcement.
It is interesting. The world is being influenced by so many complex issues. And I guess the best thing to do right now is just to keep your eyes open. And as mentioned earlier, don't get sucked in by the noise. It can drive you mad. Until tomorrow. This has been your BizNews Briefing. Cheerio. This BizNews Briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to private banking service now for your business.